Santa's not the only one delivering joy this season. Unwrap a new home with help from your Las Vegas Realtors. More than 15,000 members are ready to show you. There's no place like new home for the holidays.
At City Harvest, we believe no New Yorker has to go hungry. With your help, we're on the road every day, rescuing over 86 million pounds of nutritious food and delivering it free to millions of New Yorkers, transforming surplus food into sustenance, sustainability, and smiles, rallying thousands of New Yorkers to power a network of nourishment across our city. Feed good for our communities, our city, and our planet. Donate at cityharvest.org.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The holidays are the most wonderful time of the year, but they can be incredibly stressful. The hustle and bustle combined with shorter days can take a toll on one's mental health. I'm Rob Hart. We talk about mental health, the holiday blues, and how you can cope this week on At Issue.
Angela Cummings, Executive Director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Illinois chapter, and Cynthia Pitipati, Board Member of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Thank you for joining us today on At Issue. Of course, this is a very personal issue for many people. So just talk about, Angela or Cynthia, either one can go first. What brought you to this organization?
Right. So I am the executive director of our Illinois chapter, but I'm also a suicide loss survivor. So I lost my grandfather to suicide over 30 years ago. He was an older man, and some of those risk factors that go along with being an older man were definitely present with him, and we didn't see the signs. And then about 13 years ago, we also lost a very good friend to suicide. My husband and I, it was a best man at our wedding, his very best friend. Completely different risk factors, completely different warning signs, but that one really hit us hard. We were all kind of doing the same things at the same time in our life, having kids, had just gotten married, like all of those things. And then it really just hit us like a ton of bricks, you know, like how could this have happened? And personally, I was thinking, how could this have happened to me again? You know, how could this have happened to me twice? And so when I got connected to the foundation, I really started to understand more about both of those losses and how they were different and how they were similar in certain ways, too, and how I could really make a difference and make sure that another family or another person didn't go through this type of loss.
And then, Cynthia, what is your connection that brought you to the organization?
So I am a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and I spend most of my time with children and adolescents. And so what first kind of got me into this work was in clinical practice. So seeing young children, sometimes as young as 8, experiencing suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation, along with their other mental health issues, brought me into the space. And then as I continued my graduate studies, I was in an Ivy League university, and there were 15 deaths by suicide within like a period of 5 to 6 years. And so I was like, what's going on? How come some of the best and brightest minds in our country are ending their lives? So it really kind of moved me into the space of learning more about suicide prevention, risk, the research that's being done, especially with the young adult population. And I had attended my first Out of the Darkness community walk in Philadelphia at the time, and AFSB hosts those across the country. And I was really struck by how hopeful the tone was, how many people came out and were joining together in community to support each other. And then when I moved to Illinois, I got invited to be on the board. And so it's been a wonderful organization to be part of. And I'm really excited to be part of the movement to prevent suicide.
Now, Angela, your personal experiences are a good jumping off point for this discussion, because you talk about the 2 losses in your life to suicide, and 2 different people, mm-hmm. 2 different circumstances, mm-hmm. 2 different sets of risk factors. And what, for those who are uninitiated, what are some of the risk factors for suicide?
Yeah, that's a great question. So risk factors are defined as those things that just kind of exist in a person's life that may be sort of percolating in the background that may increase their risk, right? So, and they could be things like health issues, for example, with my grandfather, we're pretty sure that he was having an underlying health issue. And in that population, in that time, he didn't want to be a burden to people. So that may have been an exacerbating factor for him. It could be environmental factors like a job loss or a relationship loss. It could be a mental health condition that somebody has that may or may not have been diagnosed or may not have been treated or treated adequately, right? So those are all risk factors that could be playing into somebody's suicide risk, right? The chance that they may enter a state of mind where they may be in a suicidal crisis. Those are different than warning signs. Warning signs are those observable signs that we can see in people that they may be reaching a suicidal crisis moment.
Now, what to do if you are a family member or a friend? Let's talk about the person who potentially lost their job, and or they're going through a divorce or a bad breakup. And your inclination to say is, you know, you're going to be okay. You're going to get that next job. You'll find the right person. Don't you worry. Everything's going to be okay. And I think we all know this. It's easier said than done. So if you are a friend or a loved one in this situation, you know, what are some good strategies that are also the right strategies too?
I think it's important to open up the dialogue and ask a simple question like, how are you? And really open up a space where your loved one or your friend feels comfortable sharing with you however they're feeling. And I've been in that experience many times where I've had friends that have a significant loss or, again, a divorce, loss of a relationship, change in jobs. And I think that we live in an environment we feel like we have to be okay, or we've kind of put on a facade like, it's okay, I'm going to be fine. This idea we always need to be positive despite whatever we're going through. So I think allowing people that room to not be okay, and also sharing with people, it's okay not to be okay. I'm here for you, regardless of what you're feeling, what you're thinking. It really opens up the dialogue.
Yeah, it seems like those of us who are friends or caregivers or relatives, when somebody's having a hard time and they start to talk about having a hard time, this is one of my bad traits, ironically, is that you just want to jump in and have the words of wisdom immediately. You can't give the other person the space to actually express themselves. And that's, so when you say just check on somebody, it's easier said than done, because if you ask someone how they're doing, their response is, I'm fine. And that's it. And then you, as the friend, you know, you want to say the magic words that'll make it all okay. Mm-hmm. And you don't give them the space to express themselves.
Absolutely. And I'm someone that really enjoys talking. And so some of the things that I've had to learn over time is just sometimes just listening, being silent, even though those silences can be really awkward, giving them space to breathe and just listening and supporting whatever they're feeling and thinking without kind of, like you said, jumping in and wanting to give them advice or telling them what they can do or saying it's going to be okay, it's all going to be fine. So reassurance and encouragement are great, but in that kind of very critical or vulnerable moment, just to give them that space.
We always say avoid giving advice, avoid trying to fix it. If you've never been in that space where you're experiencing an intense suicidal crisis moment or just really an intense moment of you know, self-harm, it's impossible to really to know how that other person is feeling. And giving advice does not land well. Just those that reflective listening tends to land a lot better. And so, you know, also philosophical discussions about life being worth living in that moment are also not helpful. They're already kind of in a state of tunnel vision if they're entering like a crisis moment, and they really just can't, they're not seeing other options. And so we just say like that reflective listening is so important. Sharing a story of your own can be great too. If they're not quite ready to open up, you can say, okay, well, I know when this happened to me, I was feeling this way. And they may not open up in that exact conversation, but you've then laid the groundwork so that they know that you're a safe person, you've brought up an uncomfortable topic, and you've shared something very personal. So when they are ready, then they know that you're a safe person to go to.
And then, you know, how successful is this approach? Because obviously there must be a lot of research, and we talk about people who have been lost to suicide, but there are also many people who expressed themselves and discovered they were in a safe space and that pulled them out of that darkness. And can you share any success stories?
It's really hard to know what you don't know. So that's kind of the I don't know. It's an interesting part of being in this space. Like, we don't actually have a way of measuring how many people's lives we saved because they didn't make an attempt. They didn't end up in a hospital, and they may never have even reported to anybody that they were feeling suicidal. But we do know that research does show us that when we talk to attempt survivors and people who have struggled with mental health conditions, that really talking about it openly is the one thing that helped them the most. And the data does show that. Some people are afraid to talk openly about suicide or mental health in general. They think it'll put the idea in someone's head. And the data does show us, the research does show us, that that's the opposite, that it's really almost like a weight has been lifted off their shoulders when you broach that subject with them. It's like, oh, finally. I can talk about this. I can talk about this openly. I've been afraid to even admit this almost to myself, and now I can speak about it, and then you can get them connected to help.
And I can share a little bit more about from the youth perspective. So I currently work as a professor in a school of nursing. And so when I'm teaching my young adult students, I also talk about, I use myself as an example sometimes too, that it's okay to talk about mental health stuff, to be a model for that. So I sometimes have shared that I've struggled with anxiety, and being able to communicate that in the way that's non-stigmatizing, that we kind of normalize that these experiences are common. And I share that, and then the students, I have had many students come up to me after class or at different points throughout their time with me to share, I'm going through this difficult experience. And so I'm able to connect them with resources and supports. So I've really enjoyed working with youth. And also there's been a huge shift in the last 10 years in terms of nursing students wanting to go into mental health nursing or being more comfortable talking about mental health struggles that they themselves has or loved ones. So I think the culture is also changing a little bit, that people feel more comfortable having those difficult conversations, which in the end can save someone's life.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. We're talking about mental health challenges, especially at this time of year. Thank you for listening. I'm Rob Hart. We're talking to Angela Cummings, Executive Director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Illinois chapter, and Cynthia Pidipati, who is a board member of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Illinois chapter. On the subject of talking and listening, it seems like we're in this golden age in which anybody can express themselves through social media. You have a voice now that is a lot more powerful and can reach more people today compared to decades past. However, the other side of that is that we already have reams of research that shows you that social media has an incredibly harmful impact on your mental health, and that harm becomes even more profound the younger you get. In your own research, in your own experience, talk a little bit about the impact of social media, not only on mental health in general, but also on the foundation's mission.
Well, social media can be like two sides of the same coin, right? In some instances, it can actually be helpful because there are people who have, you know, social anxiety, and it may be a way that they can reach out and connect. It's in a safe space. It's at home. And there are instances where, like, really people have formed networks that they couldn't have formed without social media being a tool that they've used. So I don't want to just completely say that social media is evil and bad all the time. I think it can be helpful if used correctly, and if you're in a good, safe space with, you know, a good group of people, it can actually kind of boost your mental health and boost your feelings of belonging. Of course, the flip side of that is what ends up being publicized the most, and those are those really harmful situations where, and especially with youth, you know, people are putting forth this image of just complete perfection. And it's one of the things we're talking about even in the holiday time now. You'd be like the holiday blues where people get, you know, feeling really down. It's like everybody else's family is perfect. Their Christmas tree is awesome. They've got great presents. Their dog is happy. They're frolicking in the snow. What is wrong with me, right? And so it just, I think it can set like these expectations that are just so unreal.
Santa's not the only one delivering joy this season. Unwrap a new home with help from your Las Vegas realtors. More than 15,000 members are ready to show you. There's no place like new home for the holidays.
You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
At City Harvest, we believe no New Yorker has to go hungry. With your help, we're on the road every day, rescuing over 86 million pounds of nutritious food and delivering it free to millions of New Yorkers, transforming surplus food into sustenance, sustainability, and smiles, rallying thousands of New Yorkers to power a network of nourishment across our city. Feed good for our communities, our city, and our planet. Donate at cityharvest.org.
Realistic, and if we as adults are kind of falling prey to that, kids are just falling prey to it just, you know, exponentially, because they really can't parse out like what's reality, what's, you know, what's really going on with these people and these perfect Instagram posts. You know, so I mean, it is two sides to the coin. I do feel like there are useful purposes for social media and getting messaging out and forming connection. I just think it can be really harmful. And as I'm going to let Cynthia talk about how we maybe can protect youth in that situation. I think they're the most vulnerable.
I agree with you. And I also say that social media is a tool and it can help or harm. I do think, though, around the holidays, it is important to have honest and open discussions with youth. And so if you're a parent, a teacher, yourself as a youth listening to this, that it's okay to take a break from social media during the holidays. As Angela mentioned, there's a lot of comparison going on and a lot of people may have this idea that everyone's Christmas is wonderful or the holiday season's great. And it's okay to take a break. It's okay to be off social media for a little bit, come back to it. And because it also can exacerbate feelings of loneliness, isolation. It also can make young people feel like I have to do this or I have to like portray myself in this way in order to get positive feedback from their peers. And so I think giving permission to kind of step away from it is okay. And also I think for parents too, having honest conversations with your children about, again, that there is this kind of aspect. Social media is like one version of reality. It doesn't always match up with the lived experience of others. And being able to have conversations, whether it's people that you know on social media, checking in with people, how are you doing? You know, oh, I see this is what you posted, but I just want to check in. I think that also helps kind of us broaden the versions of reality that we're posting online.
You mentioned the holiday blues. What is it about this time of year that causes so much mental health stress for so many people? And this is not new. Mm. I mean, even going back to It's a Wonderful Life, George Bailey meets his guardian angel in the middle of a bridge. So this is something that people have grappled with for decades, if not centuries. So what is it about this time of year? Is it just the lack of daylight? Is it the expectations that we put on ourselves at the holidays? Or is it a little bit of both?
Yes and yes. I mean, you really hit on it there. Well, first of all, holiday blues is something that, according to NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 90% of Americans say that they get some form of like the holiday blues between Thanksgiving and New Year's. So it's a common thing that we're all going through. It's not a clinical diagnosis. It's different from an actual mental health condition. It's kind of this acute, you know, state that we find ourselves in because of, like you said, all sorts of factors, lack of daylight. It's cold. Maybe you're inside a lot. You're not interacting with nature as much as you used to. The financial pressures of having like this perfect holiday, just the social pressures of trying to get together with everybody. Your routines are off. Even if you're off doing fun things, your routine is off. You may not be sleeping as much as you usually do. You may be drinking more because you're at the holiday party. Your diet may have just gone right out the window. You're just eating nothing but cheese. You know, these are just things that happen during the holidays. And while we're, even if you're not feeling it in the moment, sometimes cumulatively, it'll just sort of pile up. And then you find yourself depleted on December 31st and thinking, what did I do wrong? Why am I so sad? It's the holidays. So yeah, it's just a combination of factors, I think. Yeah.
I agree with you. And I think that as you talked about, this has been going on for years. It isn't a new phenomenon. And recently I've been thinking about older adults but all ages too. I think sometimes we also have this kind of nostalgia, perhaps about holidays in the past. This is also a time when we reflect about loved ones who may not be with us anymore. Sometimes there's a sense of loss and grief. Or again, this, like as Angela mentioned, this expectation of what you hoped it would look like, what you wanted it to look like. And when your lived experience may not match up with that expectation in our heads, it can really, I think, cause people to go down that spiral of being stressed, being sad. And I think that really checking in on people, and actually I just did it this week. with a friend of mine. I said, how are you? How did your Thanksgiving go? You know, I knew this would be challenging for you, or you share that this could be challenging for you. So I want to see how you're doing. And sometimes something so little like that can make a huge difference, because people know that they're not alone and that we're all kind of in this together. And many of us struggle, you know, even those of us who have families and friends that care about us, many of us can find ourselves in that situation where we feel a little bit alone, isolated, and really need extra community and support during that time.
And to top it all off, the sun goes down at 4:30 in the afternoon, which, even though that's just a fact of life in the Northern Hemisphere, and several weeks ago on this program, I talked about how much I enjoyed walking through the streets of the Loop and looking at the Christmas lights twinkling on the trees. But the reason why those lights are on is that it's pitch dark at 5 o'clock and the sun was out a mere 6 months ago. And we talk about seasonal affective disorder, and the 12 hours of darkness plus at this time of year does have a cumulative effect on a lot of people.
Oh, it absolutely does. And that's why we say if there's any way you can get outside for any amount of time during the day while the sun is out, or sort of out. I mean, it could be behind a cloud. That's fine. Even just a little bit can help so much. And then if you can't do that, there are studies that have shown that just looking at pictures of nature on your computer screen, for example, like those automatic things that like go through your screensaver or whatever, where you're like, that's a beautiful place, I'd like to go there. Even that can kind of boost your serotonin if you can't actually get outside that day. So we can't really emphasize enough, just getting a little bit of sunshine or vitamin D or fresh air can be so helpful. And it seems like such a simple thing. And it is, but it can be easy to overlook when you're just in the middle of your day, for sure.
I agree with you. And there's been something kind of new coming out. And again, on one hand, it's new, but it's not really new. Something called social prescribing, where healthcare providers literally write a prescription for, you know, get out in nature for 15 minutes a day, to, again, almost like legitimize the power of being outside, being in nature. I know during the pandemic when we were all stuck inside, I called it like my little city walks or city adventures. And I live here in the city, so I would be able to go take a walk and it really would help me clear my mind. Like I said, being outside in nature. And so we shouldn't underestimate the things that we used to think were very simple. Breathing, taking deep breaths, getting outside, just having those moments of peace, maybe putting away our phones or devices, just to have a minute to ourselves, can also help us kind of combat the holidays and, as we talked about, the limited sunlight.
I want to ask you very briefly about COVID. How did that complicate your job? Because you did have, you know, for almost a year, it was also a very isolating time where a lot of people just withdrew and stared at their phone or their tablet the entire time. What was the cumulative impact on mental health brought about by that isolation?
Yeah, that's a really complex question. So there's a couple of things that I was thinking off, you know, just thinking of right off the top of my head when you asked that question. I mean, we all learned how to use Zoom, and we all learned that we can use Zoom to do meetings and that we can use Zoom for telehealth. So prior to COVID, insurance companies would not cover mental health appointments conducted by telehealth. They just didn't think it was a way that you could deliver mental health services, right? It was not going to work. Well, then suddenly during COVID, it was really the only way people could see their therapist. And it turned out to be a really great way to see your therapist. It is more equitable. People didn't have to take time off work. They didn't have to find childcare. They didn't have to travel to go to their appointments. So that's kind of like a silver lining that came out of COVID, I think, was that we learned that telehealth can be just as good as like in-person health appointments, for sure. We did a lot of education. You know, interestingly, the suicide rate during those years did not actually go up at all. In fact, it leveled off. In times of mass trauma, people do kind of come together and sort of have this, we're all in this together, we're coping kind of like reaction that kind of bolsters mental health in a way. I think as COVID dragged on and maybe employment didn't come back or those friend groups didn't reform and there were sort of those lingering effects, then I think it really sort of kicked in a little bit more and started to affect people's mental health more. And we did see, unfortunately, after COVID, a little bit of a U-turn and the rates went up to where they had been before. So,
Yeah, I have an anecdotal story just to share real quick about the pandemic, as you mentioned, too. So my family loves the game Yahtzee, and my family is scattered across the United States. And so during the pandemic, we scheduled Zoom calls and we played Yahtzee together on the Zoom, which was so much fun. And again, something so little really brought us together and felt like we're connected, even though we weren't able to see our loved ones for over a year. So a little fun story about that. But in terms of what you talked about, mental health, what I think is fascinating, though, one of the positive things, if there, we can say positive things came out of the pandemic, despite the devastation and loss that we experienced during that time, is that I feel like everyone was experiencing some sort of mental health difficulty. So I think it actually normalized the fact that, oh, wow, we need to be talking more about mental health. And it happens to all of us. And so we all have mental health, and we all have mental health that can struggle during different times. So I think it actually elevated the conversation and brought it more into kind of our day-to-day lives, mainstream, the fact that everyone was talking about it. So I really do appreciate that. And as Angela said, that, you know, we had kind of a collective effort to bring mental health services into the communities, into people's homes. And I think since then, many people are more comfortable to broach the subject and hopefully reach out for additional support and resources during times of struggle.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart, talking about mental health with Angela Cummings, Executive Director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Illinois Chapter, and Cynthia Pitipati, Board Member of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Illinois Chapter. Now, here's a case of the broadcaster applying something he learned during the program, and that is, how are you doing? And I ask this because this is it's a very personal issue, and it's you have probably heard so many stories and met so many people over the course of your work. And Angela, you mentioned, you know, that there are probably a lot of people who may have had suicidal thoughts, but were pulled out of it by people talking to them or allowing them to express their feelings. There are people who may have been pulled out of it, you know, thanks to a clinical setting, but there are also a lot of people who didn't. And, you know, how do you prevent, you know, stop yourself from second guessing yourself about, you know, this, what could I have done differently to save this person?
Right. And I understand that feeling a lot. I went through it myself with the two losses, of course, that I experienced personally. You know, in this work, it can be difficult. And there are times where I will talk to a loss survivor, you know, on the phone. You know, they were well-versed in what we've been teaching for years, the risk factors and the warning signs. And they're saying, we thought we were doing everything right, you know. We just want to emphasize and take away any feelings of guilt or that somebody may be having if their loved one dies by suicide. Oftentimes they're getting treatment, but it may just not be the right treatment. And you may have seen the warning signs, but you just can't be there 24 hours a day. You know, mental health is so complex, and we don't want a survivor to ever feel like they did something wrong or that it was their fault that their loved one died by suicide. Plenty of people who are in treatment die by suicide. It can be very tricky to land on that perfect, you know, treatment. So, or therapy that's going to work best for someone. You know, when I talk to a loss survivor personally, and it, you know, I've been working at the foundation for 11 years now. You know, sometimes I really just have to, I do kind of internalize their pain, and there's no way that you can't if you're a feeling empathetic human being. And sometimes I just have to close my computer lid and take a walk to the lake and look at it and take a deep breath and remember that, you know, there's so much hope, there's still so much hope, and there's so much healing that for all of us to go through. And it is really kind of a hopeful job in the sense that people come out to our events and they know that there is still hope and that they can help another person and another family from going through this.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'll share a little something personal, too. I felt like there was a period the last few years that I've really struggled with different things personally and professionally. And actually, when I was invited to join the Illinois board for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, I found a profound sense of community where everyone was so caring and warm and kind. And I was just really touched by that. And it made me realize that there are really good people out there doing really great things. And it really gave me a sense of hope. And it really helped me realize that even though suicide is very sad and it can feel really heavy at times. The fact that so many people are invested in improving the mental health and lives of other people really gives me hope. And I'm just really grateful for AFSP and the foundation for kind of bringing me in because it does give me a sense of purpose when it comes to mental health and making changes.
And then lastly, if you or someone you know is in crisis, you can call or text 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline or contact their text line by texting TALK, T-A-L-K, to 741741. You see the signs all over the city and all over the suburbs. What can you expect if you reach out?
So if you call 988, you're initially going to be assessed by the trained person who has answered the phone there. And these people go through extensive training. And so they're going to sort of assess where you are in terms of how critical your suicide ideation is. Have you made a plan? Do you need immediate intervention? Do you just need to be connected to resources? And I will say it is surprising to people that over 50% of the people that call 988 are not the person in crisis themselves. They're like a friend or a family member who is just wondering, like, is it time for me to step in? Should I really be worried about them? It's a parent thinking, do I need to sleep on the floor, to make sure that my child stays safe? And so it's really it's an assessment when you first call, like, where are we in the spectrum here? Are you the person that's in crisis? Are you worried about someone that's in crisis? Do they have a plan? And then they kind of take steps from there to make sure that the appropriate intervention takes place. Now, that could be recommending going to the emergency room, but we try to not send people to the emergency room with a mental health crisis if at all possible. It's not a great place to be, certainly at all, and least of all if you're having a mental health crisis. So sometimes a mobile crisis unit can come out and talk to the person, kind of balance them out, stabilize them. Sometimes they can go to stabilization centers where they can just kind of chill out, but it's not like a mental health facility. And then they can just get you connected to resources in the community so you can start making appointments and getting connected to the mental health help that you need.
Once again, if you or someone you know is in a mental health crisis, you can reach out to 988 to find help. Thank you for joining us this week on At Issue. I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Santa's not the only one delivering joy this season. Unwrap a new home with help from your Las Vegas realtors. More than 15,000 members are ready to show you. There's no place like new home for the holidays.
At City Harvest, we believe no New Yorker has to go hungry. With your help, we're on the road every day, rescuing over 86 million pounds of nutritious food and delivering it free to millions of New Yorkers, transforming surplus food into sustenance, sustainability, and smiles, rallying thousands of New Yorkers to power a network of nourishment across our city. Feed good for our communities, our city, and our planet. Donate at cityharvest.org.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.